Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, this is Mac, and you are listening to Mac's Musings. I'm not sure if I'm being heard because the thing said that I was on the air, but yet I wasn't, and now it's showing me as on the air again. Okay, here we go with Blog Talk Radio again. So sorry about that, folks. This is Mac, and you are listening to Mac's Musings, and let me go ahead and dial my guest, Osman Karim, and hopefully it won't take long to get a hold of him. And it's not dialing.
Hello?
Hello, Osman.
Yes, Mac.
Yes, this is Mac. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, you need no introduction. I've been waiting to talk to you for a very long time.
Yeah, same here.
We're like old friends.
Now, the beginning of the show might be messed up, just so you know. I mean, it's just like a couple of seconds, but the thing here for Blog Talk Radio was all messed up. It said I wasn't on the air, but then I was, and then I wasn't, and then I was, back and forth. But at least now I know we're on the air.
Well, listen, it's 2020. I'm expecting the unusual, the unexpected, all that good stuff. Par for the course. Crazy year, huh?
Really? How are you doing tonight?
I'm doing good, Mac. I appreciate you asking. I'm doing great. I'm always busy. I try to keep up with myself because I'm like trying to do 1,000 things at one time. In fact, my dad used to always tell me, slow down. You got to stop running around so much. What's the rush? And I had no answer then. I don't have an answer now. I don't know what the rush is, but I just constantly keep going. But I'm fine, though, other than that.
Well, one thing for sure, you keep yourself busy because you do so many things. One of the things, you're an artist and a sculptor. Now, did you start as a child doing artistry and sculpting?
That's, you know what, my oldest memory is of me drawing on my parents' wall, and I just started drawing, and I didn't know, I've always had an overactive imagination. In fact, it's probably why my grades wasn't as good as they could be, because I was that kid that sat in the class that was always thinking about traveling the stars and saving the kingdom from dragons, and meanwhile, my school teacher's telling me all this important stuff. I'm like, oh, wait a minute. I got to focus on this, too. So, yeah, I've always been like that. But I used to, you know, I used to thought that was a liability because of the lack of focus. I guess they call it ADD or something like that now. But I learned, as I matured, I learned that, you know, children learn differently. You know, I'm extremely right-brained. So for me to comprehend information or data that's already in existence is a challenge for me versus me creating concepts and creating things. That's easy for me. So, yes, I'm extremely right-brained. So anything dealing with imagination or high levels of quantum physics, anything to do with conceptualizing, that's the thing. I love it. I don't know if I answered your question or not.
Oh, no, you did. Because it was like more of a trying to get you to open up about being an artist, not as much as, I mean, I did ask you a question, but it was more that I wanted you to open up about being an artist, which you did.
Yeah, I don't know when I wasn't an artist, to be honest with you.
Oh, there you go. Yeah, like that, like what my dad probably would have said when you came out drawing.
Yes, exactly. My dad used to scratch his head like, what am I going to do with this kid? But that's always been me. I think I was like the Pied Piper of the neighborhood because I was always making toys out of aluminum foil for all the kids. And oh, my God, I just loved it. I just loved coming up with plays and different things for us to do. We were always entertained.
Oh, well, yeah, with somebody so artistic, yeah.
Yeah,
now
this is before video games. You know that, right? We were the video games back then.
Yeah, oh, yeah, believe me. I remember before video games. I'm 60 years old.
I don't know what the kids would do now with a stick. They don't understand that stick is a sword. You don't understand. You go hunting with the stick. You go through the woods and discover things, and they're like, "Are you crazy? You know, just turn on the PlayStation. Let's have some real fun."
Yeah, that's why a lot of kids don't have imaginations.
Yeah, I mean, they have their pluses. I think the kids are very, very smart in their own regards because I guess they're used to having information at their fingertips. So information is like, I think they take it for granted. Like we had to go study and go to the library and, oh my goodness. But just a totally different paradigm, I guess. I guess that's all I can say about that.
Yeah. It's kind of funny though, when you're with somebody who is so young that not only do they not remember that stuff because it wasn't around since they were born, but nobody ever told them about it. And excuse me, I was with one of my grandnieces, and my sister's GPS wasn't working, and she said, "Oh man, GPS isn't working." And excuse me, so her grandchildren, which are my grandnieces, they said, "Well, why don't you use Auntie?" No, that's what they call me, Auntie. "Why don't you get Auntie's phone and use her GPS?" And I pulled out a paper map because I have
God.
A paper map. Yeah. So I pulled out
like
this map and I said, "Why don't we use this map?" And so both the girls like came right up into the front seat and they're like, "What's that?" And "Ooh, that's really cool." And I said, "Yeah, this is called a map."
I'm visualizing you unfolding all the mini folds of a map because those things are huge. You got to spread it across the whole dashboard. And they're like, "Okay, next question. What is all that stuff we're looking at?" Of course, you asked me.
Actually,
I couldn't figure out a map. Huh?
Well, they were mesmerized by it, actually. They thought it was, like, really, really cool because I was explaining it to them and how to read a map, and they're like, "Wow, I didn't even know there was anything like that."
You know, I heard one time they put a rotary phone in front of these kids. I mean, teenagers, not little kids. I mean, high school kids, and they couldn't figure out how to use their rotary phone. And these are smart kids now. They're like, "Well, how do you..." No, there was no instruction. They just had to look at me like, "Well, what do we do with this thing?" They're trying to push buttons on it. I guess they look for a screen. God bless them. But the young people, they are inquisitive. I will say that. When you give them something like the map, for instance, they were fascinated by something different. You know, I don't think children will ever not be creative because, you know, all children come out drawing, and whether it's on a piece with some crayons, it's just like everybody comes out drawing something or sculpting something. And I guess some of us grow out of it, and some of us, like me and you, we don't grow out of it. So
right.
I think that's the difference.
Well, what's really nice about some of this stuff is that since they don't know about it and they've never seen it before, you can give them retro gifts and they just think it's like, wow. Because one of my nieces, I gave an 8-track tape player, and she was mesmerized. I said, "Oh, I've never seen anything like this. What is it?" And I'm like,
they are very rare these days. I actually be excited to see something like that today. And you notice we're just as excited. Go ahead, what'd you say?
Oh, I'm sorry. No, you go ahead.
No, I was just piggybacking. I said we're just as excited to see some of their modern-day stuff. I'm like, okay, how do I do this? Show me how to work this phone. And you know, I'm aging myself, but I'm like, listen, I don't have a clue. I need to get this done. You're young, you're smart, you show me what to do. So I'm just as fascinated with the tech stuff, the new gadgets and stuff like that. But I get it. I totally get it.
Yeah, me, even though I like a lot of the old stuff, because I like stuff that's, you know, a lot older than me.
Right.
If it's around and it's usable, you know, I've always been fascinated by old stuff, but I'm also fascinated by new stuff. And I've always been, and it's not to brag on myself, it's just like a truth of me,
mm-hmm.
that I've always figured things out really, really quickly. And I'm usually the one explaining stuff to people, even young kids. They're like, hey, wait a minute, you can't do that. And I'm like, well, sure you can. And then I show them how to do it, and they're like, I didn't know you could do that. And I said, sure you can. All you got to do is push the right buttons.
Listen, I need you around because I need a person like that. I am not that person. If I got to think about it and try to figure out something and read stuff, I'm like, yo, it's slow. My brain works fast, but at the same time, if I have to do data or analytical stuff, it's like, I turn into a snail. I'm like, oh my God, I got to think about something. I'm like, let me just do it. Let me figure it out on my own. But no, I can definitely use a brain like yours, because that's not my strong point. I just get frustrated.
My oldest sister, she gets frustrated really, really easily. And one time her husband, who also gets frustrated easily, because neither one of them have like a technical bone in their bodies, but they did the dumb thing, like what, you know, a lot of people have done. They paid attention to the little pop-up on the computer that said, your computer's having problems, click here so we can help you. And so they decided to do that, and then it gave them a phone number to call, so they called the phone number, and then they let them remote contact their computer to quote-unquote fix it. And, of course, they put a virus in there.
I'm guilty of that. I've done that several times. I remember when I got my first computer. Go ahead. Tell me about it. Finish. I'm sorry.
Oh, no. All I was going to say was, so she called me to try to help her fix it. Now, this is me remotely, not remotely on her computer, but just over the phone trying to tell her what to do. And she's getting frustrated because she's having a hard time finding the things that I'm telling her to find. And it took me, it was overnight that we were on the phone. We were on the phone for 7 hours to get her
God.
To fix the computer.
And you didn't get frustrated from that call?
Well, I got frustrated, but I'm good at, you know, like toning down my frustration. But she's not. She got frustrated. It wasn't 7 hours straight. It was like it went for a few hours, and then she got so frustrated that I said, look, why don't I call you back in like 15 minutes or so? Let yourself calm down, and I'll call you back. I said, because to me this is simple, and I know it's not simple to you, and so I'm trying to put it in ways – that you will understand it. And I was pulling this stuff up on my computer at the same time, so that's what I'm explaining to her. I said, I know that that's where it is because I'm bringing it up on my computer at the same time, and we have the same system. So I know that it's there because
yes,
I can see it on my computer.
I'm telling you,
go ahead, I'm done.
No, I'm listening. I'm enjoying this. No, but I was just going to say, when I got my first computer, my friend had told me my first computer, I was terrified of it. I just looked at it. I said, I didn't even want it. He said, no, it's going to help you with your artwork. So help you with. I said, well, I just don't know these buttons. I don't know how to start. And I'm so amped up in doing the creative work that if I got to stop and anything that impedes that frustrates me because I want to make something or create something. So now I go to this tech stuff. I stared at this thing for about 2 or 3 weeks. And he says, listen, just simple as this. Have something to do on the computer and work around that thing that you need it to do. And your comprehension will expand from there. And it worked. I started doing something little, and I started to do more stuff. But see, you're that rare unicorn because your right and your left and right brain, from the way you describe yourself. You are very, very, so is my friend. Cool, like some of them are fascinated with my creativity. So we're like window gazing at each other like, oh, you're fascinating. And they're like, no, you're fascinating. I said, no, you're fascinating. So I enjoy working with tech people. We get a lot done. My DP is very technical.
The only art that I do, I'm not good at doing it by hand. Well, I never was, but now I wouldn't be because I have bad arthritis in my hands. But even as a kid, I wasn't any good at drawing or anything like that. But now with the computers, I'm kind of good at doing art on the computers.
Oh, my God. Let me tell you something. I used to be, it was sacrilege to me to do anything computer-based art. I like, oh, that's not real traditional art. And I would look down at it. It would take me about a month to do something that somebody on a computer can do in like 5 minutes. And I'm like, who's the dummy here? I'm like, I tried it. And you know what? I got to admit, I'm hooked. Because, you know, the digital art is like, it's just as fun. It's just as creative. You don't get any paint on your hands. You can make multiple versions of it in a click. And so now I combine my graphic arts with some of my digital art, and I'll combine them or swap them out. And, you know, it's just another tool, and it's just another extension of extension of your creativity. So I'm kind of hooked now.
Cool.
Yeah.
I like
to
see people get hooked, because I've always been hooked on anything new, even when it was something like an Instamatic camera.
Well, that's new to you. It may not be new to the person who got one. But
and
no,
I was telling
go ahead. No, ladies first.
All I was going to say was about that Instamatic camera. Somebody was telling me something about, taking the selfies and how this is all brand new and everything. I said, selfies are nothing new. I said, even the term selfie is nothing new. I said, when I was a kid, there was this new thing called an Instamatic camera.
Yeah,
and
you had to shake
only,
it and get it. You tell about the Polaroids?
Yeah, it was just a camera, but it was small though, smaller than the usual camera, that you could carry it in your pocket, and you could take it out and take pictures, and if you were good at it, because you had to know how to like figure it out, but you could hold it up and take a picture of yourself, but it wasn't like now where you can see what you're taking a picture of.
Oh,
you couldn't see what you were taking a picture of if you were taking a picture of yourself.
Gotcha. I guess practice, you would get good at it.
Oh, yeah, and I got really good at that. And it was called selfies. When you would put the Instamatic camera up in the air and point it at your face, that was called a selfie. And that was way, way back
So what are you telling me, Mac? You got a time machine? So you actually created selfies, and now you come into the present, and now it's something that you can look back and say, I created. Wait a minute. I'm trying to – yeah, that's – I've never heard this before. So you knew about selfies before everybody else.
Yeah. Well, you know how that is. It's just that sometimes they say, oh, well, this is new. It's only new if you've never read a book.
It's rebranded. That's all it is, basically.
Exactly.
Repackaged and rebranded. Yep. Marketing 101.
I don't mind movies that say, oh well, you know, they're doing something, but it's not innovative if it's been done before and it's nothing new, like with the Blair Witch Project. They acted like that was something new. No, there were silent movies that were done that way. That's nothing new.
I didn't know that. I'm learning a lot. I never thought about it. I didn't really get that movie. What I marveled about that project was the promotion was outstanding. they didn't show you anything. Thank God they did, because if they'd have showed you something, you might be like, oh, that's what that is. I'm not knocking it. I mean, it's part of our culture now. I think it was brilliant work on them. They spent very little money, but the advertisement was groundbreaking. They spent months promoting the crap out of that movie. And then I watched it, I'm like, and I'm like, wait a minute, where's the witch at? I'm like, I'm looking for a witch that's named Blair. I see nothing but people staring at me. I guess I gotta watch it again. I don't know. I just didn't quite get it. But brilliant nonetheless. I don't have to get everything. I gotta ask you something, even though you're the interviewer, I gotta ask you something. Have you ever come across a situation? It's not really a question, it's almost a statement. But can someone be too creative? I guess I'm trying to go somewhere with this.
I don't think so. I don't see how you could be too creative.
Well, I tell you where it challenged me, and it still does. I would come up with an idea, and nobody gets it. Everybody's like, it's not. For instance, when back in the 80s, now I'm really dating myself, I was doing music, and I love R&B. That's what I do. And my partner was a DJ, and rap was just coming out, and I said, I love the drums and the scratching on raps. I don't know what they're saying, and I don't really care what they're saying, but the beat and the percussions were like amazing. I said, if I could take my average R&B song, put those beats and that scratching on my average R&B song, it would take this song to another stratosphere. So when I told my partner I wanted to do this, he's like, well, cool. I said, go to the studio and let's do it. So I did the beat, but he did the scratching. And so as a rapper, he heard the scratching the beat. He wanted to rap on my song. I said, well, go ahead. We can mix it in. You know, on the mix, you can have a version, your rap version. I'll do my R&B version. And throughout the mixing of the song, we found that we had three songs. We had my version, we had his version, and voila, we had a version together where I sung and he rapped. And so when I played that for everybody, they were like, yeah, well, that is crazy. Nobody's ever heard hip-hop and R&B combined. And then I had this ballad where my buddy said, well, let me get on this song too. So he rapped on my ballad. No one ever heard of a rap ballad before. So I took it to I moved to California because RCA was interested in the song because they never heard anything like it either. And when I got there, they said, well, this is the dilemma we have. We think that we have two artists here instead of one group. They said, well, we want to split the group up. Well, you do R&B, he does rap, because rap and R&B don't go together. I'm like, why not? Why'd you bring me to this meeting if you don't like what we're doing? He said, well, you know, the marketing team, we feel as though we can do better if you're separated. So I told him, it's a novelty group. I'm not no Luther Vandross. I don't sing like that. I sing like pop stuff. So it's real light vocals, you know what I mean? Nothing crazy. I like to put on a good show. don't test me, you know what I mean? I'll embarrass myself. But I just said, no, we got something special here. I want to move on to another record label. And by the time we, you know, look for another record label, LL Cool J did a rap ballad. And people like, wow, that's a hit. And then next thing you know, they start a couple of years later, they start putting R&B and rap together, and everybody's like, oh, that's so fly, that works. That's so, I'm like, well, a lot of times when I would come up with concepts, no one gets it, but a year later it's on television, or it's a movie, or it's a new book, it's a new game. I said, I thought about these things years ago. So that's what I mean. I didn't mean to go on so long, but sometimes,
it's your show.
it's your show. I just had the pleasure of being on it. But sometimes I'm ahead of myself, and I'm looked at like, you don't know what you're talking about, because that's not what we're doing right now. I said, that's why I'm not doing what you're doing right now, because you're doing it right now. I want to do something different, and when I try to do something different, nobody gets it until somebody else has the guts to put out something innovative, and then they get the glory, and then I'm just like, telling these great stories. That's it. So, or at least I hope they're great. But that's what I mean by being too creative, you know.
Well, yeah, that actually is, I understood where you were coming from. But that, to me, isn't being too creative. That's being naive.
I feel even less now. You didn't help, Matt.
No, I don't mean that as a put. It's not a put down.
I know,
you can
just
be
having fun with you.
Yeah, I mean, because when I was younger, quite young actually, I was naive because I was only 12 years old and I wrote my first play, and somebody was telling me, oh well, you know, this isn't good, and oh, this won't work, and this won't work, and so of course I started feeling like, okay, well, they're an adult, so they must know what they're talking about,
yeah.
And then it was made into a movie because they stole my story.
I feel your pain. I feel your pain.
And that's happened more than once. It's happened more than once to me. I wrote a play and performed it, and not just me, you know, other people. But I was the director, and I was on stage prompter, and this was when I was only 14. And mm-hmm. somebody was in the audience, and I didn't even know who he was, and I won't say his name because I'll get in trouble for saying his name because I obviously don't have any proof of this because I was a kid, and I didn't know that I would need proof. So, you know.
Right.
But anyway, so we're doing this play, and some famous director was in the audience. And I had been introduced to him because I was the director, and he said he wanted to meet the director. So I got to meet him, and even though, you know, he told me his name and everything, and it's a big name, believe me, it still makes
okay.
movies.
You got to tell me off air.
I said, well, yeah, nice to meet you. And I had no idea who he was. I have no idea who you are. And then not too long after he saw my play that was,
don't
you know, a teenager, he made it into not just a movie, but a multi-million dollar franchise.
What? Can you tell me the movie? I'm curious. Man.
Well, I will off air because, like I said, if I do it on the air, I don't want to get sued. Because, like
no,
I said, I have no proof because I was a kid. But
right.
that's what I was talking about with being naive. I was naive,
yes.
not realizing that when you write something like that, that you need to have some kind of a protection on it, like saying this was written by, and then put your name on it and the date. And even if you don't get it copyrighted, at least have something to show that it's yours. And
right.
I didn't have that. Because
at that age, you wouldn't imagine someone would take something, especially of that stature. If you're this and that and you're that great, why would you take something from a child? I mean, you're supposed to be giving something to a child. So it's kind of counterintuitive. So I get it. I learned that same lesson when I was I can't show you what my aluminum foil sculptures look like, but you've seen some of my pictures of my aluminum foil sculptures. But I've done that since I was 5 years old. And when I was a young guy, I decided to, I don't know, I might have been 10. I decided to submit some sculptures to Reynolds Aluminum Foil. I did the storyboards because I found out what they were for the commercial. I created the characters and I still remember Sir Foil a lot for Reynolds. Well, I don't say the name of the company. You just told me that, you know, you just remind me, Kat, I got to watch by, you know, putting people's names out there. But there's a foil company, a very famous foil company. I submitted some stuff to. I did the sculptures. I did the music. I did the storyboards. And I put it all in a box and sent it to them. I didn't know any better. I just sent them the whole campaign in a box, including the props. And they went crazy. I started getting letters. I got calls. They said, we got your stuff. And how old are you again? I said, I just turned 10. They said, oh, my God, we think this is fantastic. And I'm getting gassed. I'm like, wow. I said, Mom, Dad, Reynolds, they saw my stuff. And they said, oh, that's great. They were like, okay. So for it dragged out for about 2 or 3 months, I guess. It felt like a year to me, but it was a couple of months. They were saying that they were going to look over some things and come up with something. And then finally, you know, they finally gave me the call and says, well, unfortunately, we can't use your stuff because it's a conflict of interest in regards to our promotional advertising agency. It's we're contracted to work through them. And I was a little heartbroken. My little heart was broken, and I didn't do any foil for a long time. But I was being naive. I didn't know. You know what I mean? But, you know, I did have a second reprieval of that because when I became an adult, I started doing television shows, you know, featuring my artwork. I did Fox. I did ESPN. I did Home and Family Network. And out of nowhere, I get a call from a famous the name of the company, a descendant of the original creator of the company had called me and said, well, my name is blah 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 and my grandfather invented this product and I think my grandfather would love you, so I want you to come down to and we're going to try to get you hooked up with the company, et cetera. So I'm like, wait a minute, I'm getting a second crack at this. So I go down there, and I meet all of the brass of this Fortune 500 company, and they take me on a tour. They give me, the whole red carpet thing. I said, stay cool. Let's see what happens. And I told the gentleman who had introduced me, very nice guy, I said, I love all this fluff, but show me the decision maker. I want to talk to that person, and let's see where we are as far as going forward. So I sat down with the decision maker. The guy must have been 2,000 years old. He was old. And I was checking for a pulse. He was like sitting there. And he was so stoic. He didn't move. He just looked at me. And I you can tell by my personality. I was happy to meet him. I said, hello, how you doing, blah, blah. And he looked at me like, I know who you are. I'm like, oh, he's like the Crypt Keeper. And I said, okay. He says, we've seen your work. I said, okay. And he says that we've decided that we would like to go in a different direction. I said, well, what are you going to, are you going to pop out of a casket and bite people? You sound like Count Dracula. But I said, okay, I can't walk away. Tell me more of your rationing for this. So he broke it down. He says, well, we own 90% of the market and blah, blah, blah. And we want to go with a more folksier approach. I said, folksier? Okay. Anyway, I left there. I was like, I'm done. I'm done. I don't want to see another piece of foil the rest of my life. And the gentleman who introduced me, he felt so devastated because, like, I said, I didn't get that. He said, but, he's old. He's going to die one day. And you can come back. And I mean, I think he basically said it that way. That was kind of crash, but he said it. And that didn't do much for me, but I just thought, it's always – the one person that stands in between you and your objective. And today I don't wait for somebody to make a decision for me. I do what I got to do and I'm independent. I don't go to anybody for anything unless it's something that we can mutually gain. So that's the lesson I learned from that. So now I'm doing better just doing what I got to do. And,
cool.
Yeah, that's where I am today.
Well, excuse me. I did want to ask you is your art available for sale, your art or sculptures? And if so, where can people buy this art or sculptures at?
Absolutely. And I have my notes. You can go to my Facebook page, Osman Kareem, and that's spelled O as in October, S as in Sam, M as in Michael, A as in Alpha, N as in November. Kareem is spelled K as in Kevin, A as in Alpha, R as in Robert, R as in Robert, I is an Indian, E is an Echo, M is in Mary. And that's also with Instagram. And I have a Twitter, but I don't use it. But my IG is by my name and same as for my my Facebook page. But I also have my web series on the Facebook and IG, which is Riff. Well, I'm getting ahead of myself. I don't know if you're going to talk about any other stuff. But as far as my sculptures, yes, you can find you can contact me via Facebook. I have my phone number and all my contact information. I can make anything out of that stuff. It's just been doing it since I was 5, and I'm no spring chicken. So I'm young, but not young, young. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I know what you mean. Well, since you already started talking about it, why don't you just go ahead and start talking about the Riff website and the web series?
I thought you'd never ask, but here we go. I have a web series. It's called Riff, The Sound of Blood, Sweat, and Tears. It's basically the best comparison I can make is it's kind of like 8 Mile's Eminem's rap battle movie, but it has a little bit of an Empire and a little bit of Power mix. It's a family drama. It's a coming-of-age story about two biracial twins that have musical gifts, but it's so much more. This show, when you see, I had the first episode on YouTube, and once you see the first episode, you're going to like, wow, he put all this in one show. And it's dramatic, it's heartbreaking, it's exciting, music-based, it's got crime element that you will not believe, that a little bit of a supernatural, it's just so much, it's a smorgasbord of stuff, but I have to give credit to my production team. I have the best production team in the world. Eric Davis, Hugh Tran, Danielle Bouchon, Warrenetta Johnson, Ega Acosta. We just got a great team, and we're going to do some great stuff. But that the web series is called Riff, once again, RIFF, The Sound of Blood, Sweat, and Tears. It's available on YouTube. But the rest of the season will be featured on my television network called Amp TV. Now, that's what I'm excited about. Me and my partner, Psyche Sound, we have this new channel that's featured on Roku and also soon to be on Amazon Fire. We are going to change the whole platform. It's basically kind of like an HBO-type thing, but with a remnant of MTV BET because it's music-based. And basically, we're going to introduce Tomorrow's Stars, the next great Spike Lee, the next great Meryl Streep, the next great Beyonce and Eddie Van Halen. We're going to bring in all the Tomorrow's Stars you're going to see. And it's going to be basically a platform for everybody who wants to have their voices amplified. And also we're going to have an AMP Camp, which is our nonprofit leg division of the show, or not the show, the channel, where we want to give back to the community. And we want to be able to give mentorships to the children, and not just children, but anybody who wants to get reengaged into the arts, because the art community has been, I mean, they've taken so much out of the schools now. It's heartbreaking. And, you know, I just want to get back to the art community, because even my show Riff is based upon the struggle of an artist. Not that that's all there is to being an artist. That's a struggle to be a doctor, a struggle to be a mother, the struggle to be anything. But we want to really give the opportunities for everybody who really puts in that hard work to try to have their dreams come true. We want to be we want to contribute to their success. That's the goal.
Oh, that all sounds really cool. So now I know what the AMPED, A-M-P-E-D, I know what it stands for because, you know, you had sent me all that promotional stuff. Excuse me. But for the listeners that don't know, tell them what the A-M-P-E-D stands for.
Oh, I should have my partner on here, for he is. He can run that thing like it's muscle memory to him. AMP, let me see if I can recite it. AMP stands for, what did he say again? All right, you're catching me off guard here. Hold on, give me a second.
Good.
Sing,
I like to catch people
sing me
off
something
guard.
While, yeah, no, sing me something while I'm looking. Let me see here.
No. Well, actually, what I'm doing is, just in case you can't find it, I'm going to look for it myself.
Oh, wait a minute. All right, hold on. I think I got something here.
Did you find it?
I'm calling the lifeline. I'm calling the lifeline.
Lifeline? Yeah, you're funny.
This is embarrassing. I should know. You got this is my excuse. Everything is so new. AMTV is only about 2 months old, and it's going so fast that we're getting international response. The submissions are coming from South Africa, South America, in the Orient, and we're like, yo, everybody from the world is like getting amped up. I mean, North America is a little, you know, it's doing all right, but the world is like, you know.
Okay, I do have it. I just wanted to make sure that I had it right. So,
all right, let's
hear it. It's AMPED, artist, musician, producer, entertainer, dancer.
You are correct. Tell her what she's won, Bob. Yeah, you did it. You know, I'm going to hire you as my my promotional expert because that you stumped me because I'm like, I got to remember that. So, yes, that's exactly right. My partner, Psyche Sam, he's the genius behind that. And when he came up with the name, because originally I told him, I said, one day it was my bucket list. I said, we're doing all these shows because he does animation, he does shows. This guy is so creative. He plays every instrument. If you saw him, you would think you were looking at Prince because he looks like Prince. He sounds like Prince. He's got a little bit of Lenny Kravitz thing, but he plays every instrument. But his imagination matches mine. So we always just dump into all this creative stuff. But he came up. I told him one day, I said, one day I want to have my own television network like Oprah. I said, you know, it's not, you know, I can have a bucket list, right? He said, cool.
Yeah.
I said, one day. I said, if I do one day get a network, would you want to be my partner? I said, sure. He said, sure. So I said, one day that might happen. And he calls me, what, 6-7 months later, which was a couple of, maybe 2 months ago. He said, you still want to do the channel? I said, yeah, I didn't change. He says, well, look, they wavered all, you know, there's a deal where we can get this channel started for half the money. I said, well, that's a whole yes. You give me half the money, I'll do it. Yes, let's do it. And I knew I was up to my eyeballs with the web series, running my graphic arts and doing all these other things. And we've been going at it ever since. And just it's a miracle how everything's falling into place. And we're really super excited. We brought in my partner Valentina Barbosa, who's also coming in, bringing in making a major contribution as far as music and bringing in artists. So we are super excited about this thing. We hopefully will launch it. I'm sorry. We should launch AMTV probably early 2020. I don't think we'll be able to pull it off by the end of this year, but we're definitely looking at 2020 on your Roku channel, and also it'll be available on Amazon Fire. We plan on having an AMP award show. So you want to get that Thunderbolt? I know you've seen the logo. You got to get that Thunderbolt. That's the goal.
Yeah.
I want a Thunderbolt. So it's going to be a lot of fun. And also, I got to ask you right now. I have you on the air. I want to know if you'll be a guest on my podcast show, 6/24 show with my partner Tisa Williams. If we can reverse chairs, that would be fantastic.
Well, it's not video, is it?
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. I'd have to think about that. I don't like seeing myself on video.
Well, okay. If you want to deny the world of pleasure, we can do a phone call. That's not a problem. Anything for you.
Oh, isn't that sweet?
All right. Just to hear your voice, that would be good enough. We'll take it. If you consider, let me know. I'll let the lovely Tisa Williams know because she's amazing too. And our podcast is, we got about 4 episodes in. We're looking at doing a few more, at least one more before the year's out.
Mm. Yeah, I could do that. Yeah,
all
I
right.
Just... Well,
you hear that world? Did you hear that world? She said yes, so the world heard that. So yes. We'll have Matt on the 6/24 podcast, video podcast show. And
yeah,
also
a lot of
on
people...
AMTV.
Go ahead.
I had to do another shameless plug. The 6/24 podcast is also going to be on AMTV as well. And we want to feature film festival selections. So we're going to have a lot of things, not just music. We're going to have film festival selections, international film festival selections, and some original channels and concerts, as well as documentaries. We're going to have a lot of fun on that channel.
Sounds like it.
Oh, yeah. Wow. It's a party. If you're not ready to be amped, don't come to Amp TV. It's a just like the name says, it's full of adrenaline. If you think I got energy, you should see my partner, Eric. He's like a fireball. I'm like, he makes me take a breath. I'm like, man, this guy's got too much energy. You got to get him on your show. He's amazing. I'll send you some stuff on him. You won't believe it. When I send it to you, you're like, what am I looking at? I said, yeah, that's him. Amazing.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Feel free to send me that stuff.
Oh, I certainly will. Tisa Williams as well, my partner on the 624.
Oh, yeah.
She sang
yeah.
like an angel. She's amazing.
Wow. Now, if you're done, because I don't want to presume, but I wanted to ask you about your novel, The God Race Prophecy. So
we don't have a lot
of time, but you can talk about it a little bit and then maybe tell people where they can buy it as well. So go ahead.
Okay. I did God Race Prophecy. That's one of my earlier projects. And believe it or not, in my own humble opinion, it's probably one of my best pieces of art. That's because I've always been a pretty good storyteller. So I said, okay, the conversion from a storyteller to a novelist should be easy. Boy, did I have a lesson to learn. Writing is, I respect every craft and the whole, that, you know, the whole literal skill is just like I had a tough learning curve because, you know, you don't just because you got a pen and a pad doesn't mean you can write. So I wrote the book, The God Rape, back in 2000 and I guess mid 2000s or early, late 2000s. And the God Rape Prophecy was originally a comic book. The plan was to release it as a comic book. And it's basically, well, let me tell you what it's about first, because if the audience isn't interested in what it's about, they don't care about any stories about it. So basically, it's based upon, well, it's urban fantasy, first of all, dark urban fantasy. And it's an epic. It's a 600-year-old epic. And basically, it's about a manuscript that the church had discovered 600 years ago that prophesies the foretelling of a supernatural weapon known as the God Wraith. And the story starts off with the Pope talking to one of his proteges that when he leaves, he's going to have to take over as the next pope, and his mission, like every pope that's sat in the throne for the last 600 years, is to find this God Rape prophecy, this God Rape device. They don't know if it's a device or whatever. So, and we get to the present day, and there's this urban legend of this woman that goes around. She's like a wraith. She's like a phantom, and she's flesh and blood. I mean, but the religious people think she's she's God's avenging angel, and police consider her to be a vigilante. Some people consider her the ghost of an orphan child that was killed some years prior to that. But combines biblical mythology. You will be surprised how I use real facts to bring up this story. And we have martial arts. It's philosophical. It's like Blade meets the Matrix. It's a really, some people say it's the best ending of all that they've ever read in their lives. I mean, it's a very, I don't know how it came with the ending. It just fell into place. And stuff I thought I made up in that book, I did more research and found out that it was actually factual. Now, that's a reversal. I don't know how that works.
Wow.
But I guess art imitates life, or did I say that correctly? Go ahead, I'm sorry.
No, I was just saying, yeah, that was correct.
Yes, and it's a book that's made for the theater. I mean, for the big screen. Everybody said this sounds like a movie because I'm a filmmaker, so I knew I would never, I didn't foresee me ever having the budget to do this. Maybe at some point I will, but maybe when I have TV, maybe I'll be able to do it. But it's a big, it's on three continents. It's in France, it's in New York, it's in the Vatican in Italy. So it's a period piece. It's science fiction because it goes from the past, present, and into the future seamlessly. And it's a post-pandemic story as well, so we can all relate on. We can all relate to that. But it's got, you know, that's what I mean. You don't have. You're thinking you're making things up, and I'll tell you this one thing, and I'll shut up. This is one of many weird anomalies with this book. The day I finished writing the book, hear me out. The night I finished writing the final draft of the book, the Pope died, and in the beginning of my book, the Pope died, and. And the day that the Pope died, Pope Paul, there was an orb. There was a photograph captured of an orb in the Vatican. If you look it up, Art Bell had a radio show, and he had on the website, he had some pictures of an orb in the Vatican the night the Pope died. And that's exactly how my book starts, with an orb in the Vatican. It's you can't make this stuff up. It's just. My girlfriend at the time said, "Oh, it's giving me the chills." I said, "Well, it's giving me the chills too, because it's fascinating how there's a lot of, I guess when you channel in on things that are beyond you, and I don't take credit for anything, but it just seems like when you tap into something that's you perceive to be larger than you, you pull in information that you can't even really claim as yours. Does that make any sense?
Yeah, it does. Makes a lot of sense.
Okay. That's my rundown on the Guy Ritchie. People, if you love to love history, you love she's pretty much my character's one of the was stood out at the time because there was no female leads, and everybody said, "Well, why don't you make your character a big muscle guy?" I said, "You know what? Let me tell you something. When a woman's passionate about something, those muscles don't mean a thing." And I use that as a premise for my book, because this woman has so much faith that she defies physics. That's what gives her power, her belief in knowing that she has a supernatural or an ordained governance over herself. So she doesn't fear dying. She doesn't fear injury. So, and her genetics are, you have to read the book, see how her genetics is set up, where her speed and her power. It's just amazing. Well, not amazing, but it's a lot of work went into creating something that was practical, not fantastic, where it doesn't make sense. But I use real science and real science and things like that and metaphysics to make the book make sense. And, you know, she could be walking around today for all I know. I don't know if I want to meet her. No, listen, you know, I took my actress one time to a convention. I had the suit bit made, and my model, she was tall. She looked like the character. And the reaction I got from her that she got was, like, legendary. She's like, "I didn't expect all this attention." And nobody knew her, but just the look and the presence and the look of the character, just people just gravitated to her. So I want to see you on the big screen one day. It's called The God Ray Prophecy. You can get it at Barnes & Noble. The physical book, The God Wraith, is out of print, but The God Wraith Prophecy, which I rewrote the original book, that can be ordered through all of your, you know, Nook, Barnes & Noble, any bookstore you can think of, you should be able to find it. It's not hard to find at all.
Okay, cool. So there you go,
shout
people.
Out to Dave.
Pick the book up.
And also, shout out to Dave Castelloni, who was my first time I felt like I was making a real movie. You know Dave, he would ex-hookers and Christian Carol and all that stuff. I got with Dave, and I thought I was in Hollywood, because he was doing something that I had strived to do, and we've been friends for so long. He's such a good guy. I love his movies.
Yeah, he is. He is really cool. And that's funny that you mentioned him, because he was supposed to call, and he probably got,
he was my friend.
He probably got
that?
Busy.
We talk about Ex Hookers. That's the name of his movie. I'm going to call him an ex friend if he don't call in the next few seconds. I'm only kidding, Dave.
Well, I had told him before the show started, I said, okay, look, what I'm going to do, because he wasn't sure when he'd be able to call because he's at work, I said, I'm going to extend the show a half an hour. That's why I so we're really on for like an hour and a half, or possibly an hour and a half, because I can stop the show anytime I feel like. But
feel
I
like
told
an
him
hour
that I... It's been almost an hour, because if we were on an hour deadline, we'd only have 4 minutes left.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
I'm telling you how much I'm enjoying this. I forgot we were on the air for a while. I'm just running my mouth. I'm going to listen back to this. And did you ever shut up during this interview?
Well, I had told Dave I extended it just for you, so hopefully you'll come. And the reason why I extended it is because, like, say, if he can't call until, like, just before the show's ready to go off the air, if I have it scheduled as an hour, once that hour is up, they give you, like, maybe 2 minutes extra. But anything beyond that, they just cut you off. You can
be
in mid-sentence.
Also, like, it'll be like, I can, like, and I just stop right there.
Yeah.
Thank you, Mac. I had a great show.
Okay. All right. Hold on a minute, because I believe this is him. So hold on.
Uh-oh.
Here we go.
This is I.
Hello, Dave.
David Lee.
Yes. How you doing? Hi.
The legend.
Mac, hi. How are you?
Listen, everybody. This is the most special part of the whole show. I'm the opening act. This is one of the best filmmakers.
No. I'm just a call-in expressing my awe and inspiration of a great friend.
Oh, you are the best. You know you weren't going to be my friend if you didn't call that. You know that, right?
No, but I do have to warn you both that I am at work, so if for some reason I have to put the phone down, I might just be, without warning, I might have to do that. So I'm letting you know up front there. It's a possibility.
No, put them on the line. Put them on the phone.
I might be leaving you hanging.
No, put them on the phone. I want to talk to your boss.
It's pretty, hectic here. So I was trying to call. I wanted to call a little bit earlier, but it got a little bit crazy. So, you know, but anyway, glad to hear your voice again, buddy.
But listen,
and once again, glad to hear yours as well, Mac.
Tell your boss that he... Tell your boss he's got an opportunity to be on the Mac Musing show. He's going to blow his mind.
Well, it's funny because I don't have one on this shift. We work as a team. We have no boss, so we're just, we're here at the disposal of the clients or residents, whoever happen to need our help. So that's
all right.
The nature of the beast, and right now it's very quiet. We're like in the middle of waiting for a protest to break out, so nobody's going in and out. So it makes it a little bit easier to talk because there's nothing going on at the moment. So it's like, because we're right in the center city, and a protest could break out at any time. And we were warned that several might break out tonight, but so far,
and
it's not.
It still won't be as entertaining as this conversation here, I guarantee you.
I'm sure. No, you're right. It won't be.
Hey,
tell her about some of your films. I'm sorry. I'm acting like this is my show. Let me shut up.
No, that's okay. What were you going to say? Go ahead.
I'm just excited about, talking about some of Dave's stuff. But go ahead. No, I'm going to listen. I'm going to listen for a minute.
All I was going to say was, hey, Dave, just before you called, we were talking about an ex-hooker's Christmas Carol. So you two, go ahead and discuss that.
I didn't hear that.
Let's just talk about the name, first of all, of this movie. What guy's name? Tell us about how you came with the name for this movie.
How I came up with the name? You know what?
And where was
it
your mind
really,
at when you did it?
It's really weird how that movie came to me. I was actually laying in bed trying to sleep, and I just, I don't know. I knew that I wanted to do a comedy, but I didn't know, like, what I wanted to do it. I don't know if it was a dream or what, but I was just remember laying in bed thinking
about
the whole concept.
I'm scared to know what this dream is about.
No.
Wait.
Well,
it was listening, so don't give us too much detail.
Well, right. I think I was thinking about the concept of It's a Wonderful Life and Ebenezer Scrooge and, you know, thinking about, and I never saw the Scrooge movie, and I can't remember if this idea came to me before that was out, but I just thought it would be neat to do a comedy, Christmas type of comedy, and I said, well, what if we did a spoof or a parody almost of these Christmas type movies?
Yeah.
And then I thought about, well, why not make it edgy and use like people from the hood, like our hookers and things like that. And hey, that's Hooker's Christmas. Or no, I think I thought first thought a Hooker's Christmas Carol. And then, you know what? As the story came to me, I said, well, maybe an ex-Hooker's Christmas Carol, because that way
makes
I could
all the
kind of make it
world.
A little bit more wholesome. Yeah. So I think that's how I came up with the title. Once I came up with the concept, and I'm thinking
Matt,
about, well,
you
what,
this?
You know, what could be the twist or the hook on this type of story, and making it about ex-Hookers, that's kind of where the title came in.
Mac, did you have the pleasure seeing this movie?
Oh, yeah, I did. I even wrote a review for it. So.
Oh, what a charming piece of
work.
I mean, I'm not being biased because you're my friend, but when I heard the title, I said, okay, what is Dave going to do with this? And when I watched it, it kind of gave me a sense of Trading Places with Eddie Murphy and the girlfriend was a hooker. And it just has this really – that you lose yourself in the fact that, you know – the title, but it's really funny. It's really heartfelt. It's a classic. It really is. It's one of my favorite films that you've ever done, and you got some good ones, but that is my favorite one.
Well, thank you. It's very near and dear to my heart because I had so many friends, you know, close friends, including you, work on it with me. You know, a lot of the people in the movie, it was their first one and probably only one that they did. You know, so we just had so much fun work, you know, making the movie. We just laughed the whole time we were doing it. So I never had much fun making
and my character. I don't know why you picked me to play that character. I was a black guy with a British accent who was a Harvard educated, pompous, arrogant, stuffy nerd. I'm like, yo, this is gonna require a serious acting, but nothing compares to you playing the cross transvestite. Now, talk about that, because you tried to get me in a dress. I said I'll never wear a dress. No offense to women, but and you did it. This guy.
Well,
tell
yeah,
about,
yeah
tell
I don't
about,
know if you remember. I wasn't really supposed to play that part. I was really only supposed to play one part in the movie, but I tried to.
You
get,
wanted me to play.
Nobody
that.
Wanted to play that part. I wanted you to play that, and then I wanted you to play the pimp, and I just couldn't get, you know,
very
nobody. No, you know why? Because your friend Hakeem was supposed to play the pimp, and then things happened. He wasn't able to do it, so then I said, well, I don't know if you remember. I remember
you
Hakeem was going to do it. And then
that's
I said,
right,
well, what
yeah.
if he can't do it, why can't you do it? And then you said, well, no, I said, you didn't want to touch it because you couldn't envision anybody else but Hakeem doing it. And I couldn't either, really, at the time. So I was like, just one of those things, you know, we didn't
but when you
that's
asked
how
me to
people
put a dress
end up
on.
Same old person.
Yeah, you asked me to put a dress on. I said, you know what, are you out of your mind? I will play any part. And you wind up doing it, and you make the best transvestite. Nobody can play a transvestite better than you, Dave. I don't know if you had any experience with any of that, but
I don't know if I should say thanks or I don't know what to say about that. But nothing against transvestites, you know.
No.
Absolutely
see,
nothing against. I never thought I would be playing one or pretending to be one.
Yeah. Yeah, you're not the prettiest in the world, but I mean, you know, I guess that wasn't the point, but. Oh, my God.
Well, that's what my wife told me. I was the ugliest woman she had ever seen.
Listen, you can't unsee that. What you said, you can't unsee it. I'm scarred by
that. I would tell your wife that she's wrong because has she never seen any Jerry Lewis movies where he dressed as a woman? he makes the ugliest woman.
I have
well,
seen them, and they're funny.
That's a toss up. That's a toss up. It is. That's a toss up. Let's do a sideline.
I am going to have to put you down for a second, so talk amongst yourselves because I heard my name, so I think I'm being paid.
Okay.
I did a good enough job putting him down, so it's only right that he puts me down. So, touche.
No, but seriously, his wife needs to watch some old Jerry Lewis movies because that man makes the ugliest woman. I don't know if you've ever seen his old movies, but there's one where he's dressed as a woman. He's supposed to be a woman, but yet he's wearing this low-cut dress, and he's got a hairy chest.
Oh, my God. I'm sure he's hairy, period. So after that's already making me not want to eat anything after this. So, no, I don't want to see that.
But it was funny.
That's the same thing with Dave. Dave made that whole thing work, and it was like, I give him so much credit for having the courage and having the humor to say, listen, this is fun. This is not serious. And it was just absolutely phenomenal. And, he was the right one to wear the dress. I would definitely say he was the right one. And,
okay, I'm that you're still talking about the dress.
Yeah.
Okay.
There is another guy that makes a really ugly woman is Kurt Russell.
Oh, my God. Too long.
And that was
Ben Ring, Wesley Snipes.
Man, did he make an ugly woman?
Oh, Kurt Russell. I'm wrong. I had the wrong movie. What movie is it?
I can't think of the name of it right now. I'm going to have to look it up because I can't think of the name of it.
I can't think of it either. Yeah, I was thinking of Tu Wong Fu was the only thing I could think of, and then that wasn't Kurt Russell. That was Patrick Swayze, who actually looked pretty good.
Patrick Swayze. Yeah, that was Patrick Swayze, Wesley Snipes, and somebody else. And I'm like, oh my God,
John Leguizamo.
I'm like, oh my God, no, don't do it. It's not Blade in a dress. That don't work.
That was such a well acted movie. They all were phenomenal. I thought all three of them in that, doing that.
I'm sure you drew your inspiration from that, right?
I'm going to interrupt now.
Go ahead.
It was Tango and Cash.
Yeah,
he dressed up as a woman, and he actually would be probably a really, really close second to making the ugly woman as ugly of a woman as Jerry Lewis did. Pretty close.
Oh, my God. That's
Oh, wow. Yeah.
I don't remember if
I saw the whole thing or not.
I don't think I've seen it, but I think Dave, you would definitely in the top five, definitely hands down.
Well, that's it. Yeah, it just wasn't a role I ever envisioned myself playing. And my friend Tim, who played Keith, and a couple other parts, I actually asked him to play it, and he didn't want to do it, which I thought he would do it for sure. I thought, oh my God, if he can't do it, then
you
gotta
get somebody. You have to get somebody drunk and then just tell them after the fact.
Well, I did that with him, and he still wouldn't do it. even giving him drunk, he still wasn't good enough. Yeah, I couldn't convince him to do it. But I did convince
him. I'm safe
because
I don't drink,
because
so I don't have to worry about it.
He played the pimp.
Excellent job. Yeah, a lot of fun. But all the movies I work with Dave, it's been a pleasure. I mean, I learned how to direct a lot. I learned a lot from Dave because Dave would have you out on set in 2-degree weather and would not, and it's nice. Dave is the nicest human being on the planet. Wouldn't harm a fly. You can tell he's a good guy. But when it comes down to filming, he needs a shot. He's going to get a shot. And I learned that you got to be that committed to your project and get your shot no matter what. And if you sign on to be an actor or crew, you got to get the shot. The director needs X, Y, and Z. You got to be committed. And I used to be like, okay, you guys are tired. Okay, we can wrap. Wait a minute. Dave has finished his movie, and I'm still working on the first two scenes of my movie for the last 6 months. And I said, wait a minute. I got to learn to really get super focused. So I learned a lot from Dave, and I appreciate you, brother.
Oh, thanks, man. I feel like I've learned a lot from you, too. I mean, you're such a diverse artist, and just, God, I don't know what I would have done without you over the years with your music and your art and your performances. Everybody always raved about
you.
You
say
so
perverse?
I'm, you know,
or,
very fortunate.
You say I'm a perverse artist or diverse?
Perverse? No, not perverse.
I'm
no,
not
such
with you, but thank
a talented,
you.
A talented artist.
Diverse.
Diverse, yeah.
Okay, I got these, I got these earbuds in. I didn't hear you too good. But thank you, my friend. And, you know, I have a – my ex-girlfriend said, you got to focus. You got to do one thing. Actually, my partner, she said, my partner was 624. She says, you're doing too much. She says that all the time. You're doing too much. I said, well, why? I'm like, while people are complaining about me doing too much, I'm doing things, and you're slowing me up and doing more things. So let's get going.
Yeah.
But, yeah, you taught me a lot about just being focused and, you know, getting the most out of your shoots. And
that sucks. Well, you know, you work.
And what about
– I have to work.
What about the Deep Undead?
Yeah,
well,
I was just going to bring that up, but you guys go ahead.
You know what? I'm going to put duct tape on my mouth, Mac. I'm sorry. When you come on my show,
no.
I'm going to let you take over my show. Fair? Deal?
No, you guys go ahead. Talk about it.
Do you want to know what about it? Like, well, let me ask you first. Were you able to watch the new version that I sent you, or did you get it or watch it or what?
What is on DVD?
Are you talking to me? Oh, well,
no, I was actually talking to Osmond. I know you saw it.
I know Max
saw it because I sent her. She has the new version, but I sent one to Osmond. I think it was after you got your copy, so I was asking him if he got to watch that or if he even received it. I thought you said you got it in the mail, but.
I got it, and I'm a Boy Scout, and I can't lie. I did not see it because I don't have a DVD player presently.
Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't know that. I could have put it on VHS for you if you have a VCR. I can still do that.
I definitely don't have one of those. I can get
– Oh, you definitely – okay.
Yeah, you're going back another 10, 15 years back further. We're going in the wrong direction.
Do you have a Blu-ray player?
I can get one. I'm definitely going to make a point.
Okay.
What did you do to the what was the new edition?
It will play in a Blu-ray. Though actually, it plays best in a Blu-ray if you have one. I always tell everybody when I send them a copy, the movies that I burn on my DVD recorder tend to actually play better on Blu-rays because Blu-rays accept a lot more formats. And I think it's just for that reason because I have had a couple over the past year people tell me that they wouldn't play, not the Deep Undead, but a couple other movies I had burned for people. And I think that's why, because they were looking at them in an older DVD player. And since I burn all my own, when people buy a movie from me, I burn it. I do everything. I have my own equipment. So, and it's, you know, it's a little outdated, but it usually works, works better in a more recent DVD player or a Blu-ray player. So that's why I was just curious before I answered your question, if you saw that. So
well, God forbid if somebody burns one of my movies, I'm going to be highly insulted. I'm just telling you right now. No, but tell everybody about this last interruption. I promise, maybe, but tell everybody about the concept of the Deep Undead. I know we had fun with the Ex-Hooker, which is a brilliant movie, but the concept of Deep Undead is phenomenal. Please share.
Well, geez, thanks. I think Mac and I talked about it a little bit when I was on the show before, and I can't remember if we talked about how I got the original concept. Do you remember, Mac? I don't remember if we talked about that or not.
Well,
underwater
put
vampires?
It talk about whatever you want to talk about. It doesn't matter if you talked about it before. Go ahead.
Okay.
Mac said, You guys can talk all you want. We've been off the air, so have at it.
Yeah. Funny, I think that's good. Going way back to the late 80s, before I even started doing these movies, I got the concept for it when I was working at the Salem Hope Creek nuclear power plant in South Jersey. And I met some commercial scuba divers at the plant, and they were telling me all kinds of horror stories that they experienced, while doing that type of work. Because commercial diving, it's one of the most dangerous jobs in the world, from what I understand, according to these guys. And I was actually considering doing that because I was a certified scuba diver and I was very interested in their work. So I made it a point to talk to these guys whenever I could. But they scared me out of actually doing the job or seeking employment.
What were some of the scary stuff, real quick? I'm just curious now. Like what?
The story that sticks out in my mind the most is that, because they were used to mainly dive around the service water, to unclog pipes or install pipes and things like that for the water, because they used the water from the river, they would draw it in and filter it, and they use that to cool the reactor with. So that's where I got a lot of the idea for the story structured around this nuclear plant from this service water department, they call it. But anyway, the horror story that they told me that sticks out in my mind the most was they have these pools of spent radioactive fuel, and we would actually have to, my job was a fire watch, so I would actually have to go in and inspect certain areas of the plant, and sometimes I would have to wear full protective clothing because a lot of it was considered still radioactive. You would go in with a little radiation monitor, and that was my job. So I saw these pools that the guy said they had to work in before, and I guess they worked in them when there wasn't, radioactive fuel in there. I'm not sure exactly what their job was. Told me about a guy who went in unprotected, and he wasn't supposed to, first of all, he was supposed to have protective clothing on, and he didn't. And he was supposed to stay away from the pools. And I'm not sure exactly what he did. He stuck a metal rod into the pool of radioactive fuel, and somehow, I guess the radiation was so powerful, it actually went up the rod and killed him. I don't know how.
What?
That's even possible. This is what they said. He was actually killed because he got exposed by so much radiation from this rod. I guess somehow the radiation traveled up the rod that he stuck in the water. I'm not sure why he did such a thing, or even if this was true. They would tell me all kinds of scary stories like that, and I don't know if they were trying to scare me on purpose or
but
there was a lot of safety hazards at the plant, and I do remember many friends of mine who got exposed to radiation while we were working there, and I actually quit because I was in the union. The union tried to help me, but I was actually left on a post for 16 hours without any warning of what was going on. They had an emergency and there were alarms and you're not allowed to leave your post. And I was infuriated because I didn't get a supervisor or anybody to come tell me what was happening. And you're not supposed to leave your post, or you would abandon your job basically if you do that. So I stayed on this post for 16 hours, not knowing what the hell was going on. And I was furious. I was furious. And the union,
you would be glowing.
Yeah, so that was the end of that. I quit the job. But the divers would tell me also that the water levels, and this was probably the key concept of, how I started the movie, the concept that I used for the original screenplay, was that the water levels were starting to be abnormally warm, and a lot of the fish were dying. So, and you could see it when you walk in the service water, the fish would be dead and they would be either caught in the mesh that goes around the steel drums, I think were the drums that held the water, or they would help draw in the water from the plant somehow, and the fish were all either trapped in there or they were already dead just from being exposed to the, I guess, the water temperatures were, you know, heated up.
So in the movie, where'd you get the dead fish for in the movie? You bought them at the market or something, or?
That's exactly what I did. I bought fish that were used to eat at the market in the frozen food section. That's what I did. I wasn't going to go out and kill any fish because I love marine life. So these are fish that would have been, you know.
I told you he was a
they
nice
would have been
guy.
Eaten anyway. what I did.
movie magic.
Yes.
That is fine.
Yeah, that was that simple. But yeah, that's how the concept started, and I used a lot of that knowledge that I got while working at the plant, and I put that into Pam's monologue. Her character, the news reporter, had this long, lengthy monologue when she was doing her reporting about the effects the radiation has on the water that the plants had on the community, and there's this whole thing. I don't know if you remember in the original version, this whole monologue that she has, and a lot of that stuff I was just talking about.
Yeah,
I put into her monologue.
She did a good job. She did a great job.
Yeah. That was the difficult, you know, to say all that stuff, I think, especially because she memorized it all. It wasn't like she had a teleprompter. We were talking about this a little while back when she was on the show. So, but yeah, so that's how I got the concept. So sorry for the long answer, but that's how it started.
Wow. I love it. I love it. Absolutely.
Yeah, me too.
I can't wait for you to see the new version because there's so much more to the story that wasn't in the original one. And Mac already knows.
I can't wait.
I won't go into it since you haven't seen it.
Can I ask Mac a question real quick?
Absolutely. That's for sure.
No, I'm not asking you, Dale. I'm asking her. I don't need you to get it. No.
Go ahead.
Yeah, you can ask. We need her agent or something.
Yes.
No. I'm playing.
I'm her, like, sidekick. No. I call in from time to time.
Yeah. Dave does a great job of promoting his show. But, Mac, how did you get started doing a show? I'm just curious. And how long have you been doing it?
Oh, just, excuse me, just since July.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
I'm thinking you did this for like the last 4, 5, 7, 8 years or something.
No. Yeah, I kind of wish. But really the main reason why I started doing it is because I have so many friends in the movie business, and I thought, well, you know, I can help them out a little bit, or at least try to help them out. And especially the ones that need help getting people to look at their stuff. Even though I have had really, really well-known people on my show, I've had some big-name people on the show, but I really think it's better for the people that need more help in getting people to look at their stuff.
Right.
And but, you know, me, I'm not picky, you know, whatever. So that was it, the main thing. And my first guest was a really good friend of mine. And I can use his name because obviously you can just look him up and you could see it. So, but his name is Manu Intereme, and if you don't know who he is, he was he's been in lots and lots of stuff. But the thing that he's most well known for is that he played Icheb on Star Trek Voyager, the Borg
who?
Boy.
Oh, okay.
Cool.
His name was Icheb. He was the character was Icheb on Star Trek Voyager in the last two seasons, and he was a Borg, but he was, you know, a young guy, and he became like almost like Seven's son, which is how she kind of starts. Yeah, so he was on. I don't know exactly how many episodes, but something like 11 or 12 episodes. And he's been in lots and lots of other things. But he was my first guest, and I asked him because he's like the consummate professional, and I figured, you know, there's going to be lots of stuff going wrong probably, and so he would be a good one to get. And it was a good thing because my first show, I wasn't even on my show because I got him to be on the show, and then another friend called in, and I got him on the show, but then all of a sudden, poof, I'm gone, and I had to call back like 20 times to get back in on my own show.
So me taking over was nothing new to you, right? You're like, okay, here we go with somebody else taking over my show. No, but you do a really good job. You have a very comforting voice and a mannerism, and you're, you know, you're like a prettier, younger version of Larry King.
Oh, well, thanks.
Yeah, definitely. Hey, Dave? Dave? I think we lost him.
Oh, no,
are you
I'm
still
here.
There, Dave?
I am here. Yeah, my phone has been going in and out, and I did actually have to check into the desk, but I was listening the whole time. I was checking in, but then I just heard my name, and it kind of faded out, but I can hear you fine now.
Okay.
Well, I need.
Well, we
to,
only got a couple minutes
support.
Left anyway.
Oh, okay.
So,
oh yeah. Wow. Time went by fast.
I'm telling you, I had a blast.
Oh well, good. I'm
Me
glad.
Too.
I
so
I got
is there anything?
I forgot I was on the radio. I'm sorry. Is there anything else?
Oh no. All I was going to say was, is there anything else that you know either one of you want to say, like about your work or, you know, whatever.
Yes.
You go ahead.
Yeah,
make sure. Go ahead.
Yeah, well, make sure you watch Rift, the web series, and shout out to my cast and crew, the lovely Ashley Jones Shaw, my lead actress, and Avery Ortega, my lead actor, and a host of other great actors. It's what you see Rift on YouTube, you're going to see, you know, that gives you a snapshot of stuff me and Dave do. I mean, I hope you don't mind me lumping them into, you know, our collective work. But, I haven't done any music in a while, so maybe soon I'll be doing some more music. But right now it's AMP TV and Riff and 624 podcast show, and I'm a friend of David Lee. So that's what I got.
I can't wait for the second episode of Riff because the first episode
Me either.
Was awesome.
Wait till you see what happens in the second episode.
I can't wait.
Yeah.
I'm a fan.
Well, thank you. Likewise, my friend. And a fan of Mac Musing.
Absolutely.
Aw, well, thank you. Yeah. I'm going to have to watch this show now, of course.
Yes.
Absolutely.
Yes.
I highly recommend it. I think you'll love
yes.
it.
Yes. Yes. Please watch it. And if you love it, I'll hear from you again. If you don't love it, it was nice talking to you. So.
Oh, no. You can ask Dave later. Because we only got like a little over a minute, but you can always ask him later. I'm not that way, because when I do reviews, because I'm a semi-professional reviewer, and when I do reviews, I don't trash things, whether it's a TV show or a movie or whatever. Yeah, I don't like some of them, but I can still find good things.
Yeah,
so
I'm confident you'll have a good time. It's definitely it'll keep your attention. It's a ride from beginning to the end, so I think you'll definitely, as long as you have an opinion, that's all I care. I don't care what it is, as long as you have an opinion, and you will have an opinion after seeing episode one, I guarantee you.
Oh, well, yeah, of course, I'm going to have an opinion just like anybody else would. Sometimes, probably not with this show, it doesn't sound like it, but sometimes you need to see more than one episode before you can
sure.
really get into it. And that's why I go by the three strikes, you're out rule.
Me too. I'm the same way.
Yeah. If I can't get into your show by the third episode, yeah, there's no sense in me watching any more episodes.
I'm the same way. I used to be a two-episode person, but I sometimes I will extend to three. But make sure you watch the post-credit, because there's a post-credit scene. I don't want you to miss that. So.
Okay. Yeah, I usually do that anyway because I always watch all the credits, and I like to watch for little things on the end, like at the end of Will Dukakis's movie where that macabre medicine where he was saying, we waited 7 years and this is all we got. And they were talking about the movie.
That sounds like something that Dave would come up with.
Yeah, I was just warned that the time is up. So I'm going to thank both of you for being on the show. Dave, thank you very much. And both of you stay safe and enjoy the rest of the evening.
So we can see this.
We'll all talk
for the recording
next month.
Yeah. Take care.
You too.
Okay. Bye to both of you.
All right.
Bye. Have a great night. Bye bye.
Yeah. Thank you.
Max.
You too. All right. Thank you.
Take care, guys.
You too.
Pleasure. Bye bye.
Adios.
Bye.